U.S. President Donald Trump and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer meet at the White House.
We'll once again demonstrate the power of our country's unique friendship. This is indeed a unique friendship. It's been many years, and I think it's only gotten stronger.
We remain each other's first partner in defense, ready to come to the other's aid, to counter threats wherever and whenever they may arise.
Starmer is the latest European leader to make the trip to Washington for a meeting with Trump.
Well, I think what you're seeing is the first chance for European leaders to get a sense of President Trump's thinking.
Today is Thursday, February 27th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
The Prime Minister and I have gotten off to an outstanding start. The U.S. and U.K. have a special relationship, very special, really like no other, passed down through the centuries. And we're going to keep it that way. We're going to keep it very strong.
This has been a very good and very productive visit. And with your family roots in Scotland and your close bond with His Majesty the King, it's good to know that the United Kingdom has a true friend in the Oval Office.
President Donald Trump hosted British Prime Minister Keir Starmer at the White House Thursday to address the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, bilateral trade ties, U.S. tariff threats on Europe, and demands that the continent rely less on Washington for its security.
We're going to make some great trade agreements with the U.K. and with the Prime Minister. And it'll happen very quickly.
We're leaders together in so many areas, ranked one and two in the world as investment destinations, one and two for universities, one and two for Nobel Prizes, one and two in golf as well, by the way. And we're the only two Western countries with trillion-dollar tech sectors, leaders in AI.
Starmer's applauding Trump's push to end Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but says it can't be peace that rewards the aggressor.
Or that gives encouragement to regimes like Iran. We agree history must be on the side of the peacemaker, not the invader.
You know, I think, Lori, a lot of people were asking the question going into this meeting, is the special relationship still special? And I think both men answered with a resounding yes on Thursday.
Absolutely. It was very, very genuine. And I think Trump has a genuine affection for Britain. His mother was born in Scotland. He's got, obviously, a very real affinity for the royal family. And, of course, he has two major golf courses there. Let's talk more about how the visit went. Joining us now is Daniel Hamilton, a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution Center on the United States in Europe.
So thank you very much for being able to walk us through this today.
Sure. Happy to do it.
So, Dan, let's start with, it looks like the special relationship is still special.
Well, I think it's special. It's not exclusively so. I think President Trump seems to have a certain fondness for the British. He loves the royal family. Prime Minister Starmer extended an invitation on behalf of King Charles to the president today, which he accepted, so he's heading out at some point. And he just talks, you know, in a certain way about Great Britain that is very positive. He has a good relationship, it seems, with a left-leaning Labour prime minister, which one would wonder about, but that's where it is.
It does. It did seem like a very friendly, warm meeting from what we saw so we've seen so far. But this is another high level visit in a matter of days following French President Emmanuel Macron, and you know I think it's safe to say that it underscores some of the growing fears in Europe on President Trump's push and desire, strong desire to find an end to Russia's war in Ukraine. It would appear that there is great concern within the Europeans, not only with the U.S.'s direct engagement with Moscow, but also Europeans' concerns for their own security and not being at the table, and how that could potentially impact the region's stability. What do you say about that?
Well, I think what you're seeing is the first chance for European leaders to get a sense of President Trump's thinking. You know, he's just been in office a few weeks, and they've had to line up like other world leaders to get a chance to talk to him. President Macron actually saw him, you know, last fall when President-elect Trump went to Paris for the reopening of Notre Dame. And they've known each other, of course, quite a while. But, you know, the first actually European leader who saw the president was the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, a very conservative guy. So the Poles got in first and talked to the president about, you know, beefing up defense budgets. Poland, you know, is spending more on defense as a percentage of GDP than the United States is. So they're trying to, you know, show the president that Poland is a reliable ally. I think Macron and Starmer have other things in their mind, particularly if there is some sort of arrangement on Ukraine and Europe is called to provide the sort of the, you know, the peacekeeping force or some type of monitoring force, whether the U.S. would at least provide some backstop, as they call it, to that force. Some of that would be perhaps providing air support. Some of it would be to say, you know, in the event of some deterioration, if forces were fired on or something, the U.S. would come to their support. The president doesn't seem to have given any of those assurances this week. And, of course, he's seeing President Zelensky tomorrow, where probably the most important of these meetings is going to take place.
He was asked that direct question at the news conference by a British reporter. If British troops are fired upon by Russian forces, will you come in and take our back? And President Trump did say, yes, I will always have the British back. You know, when Vice President Vance went to the Munich Security Conference and gave his speech, it seemed to me it was like the breakup talk, right? That the United States was breaking up with the European alliance and moving on to this new relationship with Russia. I think President Trump sees Great Britain and the EU is two separate entities, because in essence they are. But I think Great Britain sees themselves, obviously, as part of Europe, because they are. It's a really intricate dance.
Well, it's, you know, Europe is a complicated place. And Vice President Vance, you know, doubled down actually in the meeting with Prime Minister Starmer on his remarks in Munich, where he basically said, you know, we get along with our British friends, but they don't have free speech either. And it affects American companies and, by virtue of that, American citizens. And that was in the Oval Office. And the Prime Minister had to sort of interrupt him and say, you know, we've had free speech in the UK for a long time. We're going to continue to have that. So for that was probably the down point of the whole meeting, was the intervention by the Vice President, and otherwise a sort of a positive vibe. So Vice President Vance is sticking to his guns on this notion that the great threat seems to be from within Europe rather than the fact that Russia has invaded a country and is trying to seize its territory. So we'll see how that goes. But I think overall the president is trying to show that the Europeans need to step up on defense, that the United States isn't always going to be there for them, and they need to reconsider how they're going to do that. So, you know, they have some decisions to make. The president has pushed them to have a pledge of 5% on their GDP on defense, even though the U.S. only spends, you know, about 3.5%. They'll have to, by the NATO summit in The Hague in June, they're going to have to sort of answer that call. There are all this, you know, uncertainty about Ukraine and Russia and what the Europeans will have to do there. And then there's a question of the U.S. being stretched between its Indo-Pacific and North Atlantic commitments. And, you know, are the Europeans able to fill in a bit more in Europe so that it frees up the United States? So these are all, you know, very hard, all security-related decisions. And then you put on top of that, the president said also this week, you know, on April 2nd, he's probably going to level 25% tariffs on the European Union or something equivalent. He calls them reciprocal tariffs. So we'll see if that happens. The EU trade commissioner was here this week also to try to get some sense of, whether there's really going to be this sort of trade war or whether that we could have some other deal. Because the EU would be called on supporting Ukraine too, mainly financially. So it's not just about troops on the ground. And so, all of this is in flux. All of this is continuing. It's hard to know. Of course, these are still early days of the Trump administration.
And you mentioned Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky coming to Washington tomorrow to meet with President Trump. I know a big part of the discussion is expected to be about a deal to give the U.S. access to Ukraine's critical minerals. My understanding is they can be used in defense and nuclear and aerospace, but without specific security guarantees from Washington. What do we know about the agreement? It's sort of, we're getting mixed signals here about it. He's coming here to sign it, but then he's not necessarily going to sign it. Do you have any more information about this deal?
Well, speaking of moving targets, I think the deal as it's being fleshed out in some versions of it, of the text, have been seen now by some media organizations. It's really not, I think, to call it a raw materials deal is shorthand for something that's actually quite different now. What they're calling it is a joint investment fund. It would be jointly managed and operated by the United States and Ukraine. So its intent is really about the reconstruction, recovery of Ukraine and the Ukrainian society and economy, of which critical materials are part of it, but not only it. And that Ukraine would pay 50% into this fund from the future, as they say, monetization of the exploitation of these state-owned mineral rights. It seems to exclude, however, two main Ukrainian companies, Urnafto and Naftogaz, the one being the oil company and one being the gas company of Ukraine. So it's unclear about, what their status is related to this. There's also the original draft was the U.S. would be fully in charge, 100%, everything would go to the U.S. That's all been dropped. And now there's some vague language about U.S. having a stake in it up to what U.S. law allows, because I think they realize there are some laws that limit U.S. Official participation in equity stakes like this. If it's the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, for instance, that's capped at 30%. So unless they change the law, the U.S. stake couldn't be higher than 30%. So, this is all, again, same thing, moving target. There's also in the preface or the preamble to the agreement, at the text that I saw, a statement that says the United States supports Ukraine's efforts to secure, to get guarantees of its security. So that's a vague statement. Doesn't say the U.S. will do it itself, but that's at least something. And I think the Ukrainians are basically seeing this as not the deal, not, the end of the relationship, and now let's have the peace agreement. It is to open the door. It's more of a door opener for Zelensky to say, okay, I agree to this. Now let's talk about some other things. And he will keep pushing to try to get the U.S. to say more clearly what it would do for Ukraine later. And understand, again, to get President Trump's thinking directly on what he's thinking about with Putin and the Russians in terms of any types of negotiations to end the war. So I think, again, all in movement, all lots of ups and downs, but I think there should be a bit more clarity tomorrow on the terms of this deal, which is much more about, the future of Ukraine's economy after horrific damage rather than just the raw materials. The raw materials are really important to lots of industries in the United States. The whole clean energy transition is going to depend on all these, the high-tech, transition that we're engaged in. These high-tech companies rely on so many critical materials, and China has a monopoly on most of them. And so what you're seeing here, this is the through line for Ukraine, Greenland, Canada even, what the president's doing. If you look, what's the common thread? It's about critical materials. He's trying to find places where he could strike deals to secure access to these materials, with China looming in the background. He doesn't want to be dependent on China for these types of, important resources.
Well, and it is deal-making, isn't it? You can see this thing taking shape. Like Laurie said, he's not just transactional. He's also mercurial. The situation changes unpredictably. It seems, his mood changes, he changes his mind. And right now he's enjoying the attention of having all of these leaders come, in essence, with as much dignity as possible, coming and begging for what it is that they're looking for. And he is shaping a deal.
Well, there are many deals probably to be had, and they're all, some will be at cross purposes, but I think, what you're seeing is him trying to put together a patchwork of deals to try to advance U.S. interests as he sees it. And as you say, he'll send something out on social media, or he'll say something in a press conference, and then later he'll say, oh, I didn't mean that, or I didn't say that. He did that today, where someone said you had called Zelensky a dictator. And he said, oh, did I really say that? Oh, man, I can't believe I said that.
I saw
so
that, yeah.
He walked back to his own comments on himself. And so it's hard to know, And I think that's always the sense of the president. He is this mercurial person who just reacts in the moment. The important, he hasn't seen two really important European leaders. One is the president of the European Union, of the Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. Even though he says the EU is out to screw us, he said, literally, the European Union is a major partner and financial supporter of what's going on in Ukraine in particular. So, and of course, they have the competence within Europe for all trade. So that's an outstanding meeting, and he's been avoiding her. The other one, of course, is the next German chancellor. There was also this week, an election in Germany, and Friedrich Merz, the conservative leader of the mainstream conservative party, is the presumptive chancellor of Germany within the next 2 months or so, as they finish a coalition negotiations. And he will need to come to Washington or see the president soon, because Germany, of course, is the swing state in Europe, and we'll have to see how that relationship now plays out. Vice President Vance avoided the current chancellor, Olaf Scholz, in Munich, and his aide said, he's yesterday's man, we don't even need to see him. But the next, tomorrow's man, Friedrich Merz, is a deep transatlanticist, but he said recently that, the U.S., the Europe might not be able to count on the United States anymore for its security. It'll have to figure out how to build an independent capability. He flew immediately after the election the next day to Paris to see Emmanuel Macron to understand his meeting with President Trump. I think there's a lot bubbling in the German scene that we will see come out now that they might have a more stable centralist government coming our way.
And with all of these different pieces to this puzzle, it seems that what happens will ultimately shape the future of European security, geopolitical, the whole geopolitical landscape.
Absolutely. I think the question here is the U.S. really turning away from its main partner in the world? For 80 years, the United States has been a European power. It's been integrally involved in all of the compromises and coalitions and, been a source of reassurance to the Europeans about themselves as much as about, their own security. And are we stepping away from that role now because we don't see it as intuitively important anymore? Secretary of Defense Hegseth said, we're focused on the Pacific these days. He walked back some of those comments, but I think that's the looming question underlying all of these elements here. Is the United States going to maintain this role as a European power, being totally integrated and focused and sort of the reliable backstop for the Europeans? Or are we shifting to a different role, which would be simply another power in Europe intervening on our own as we might like, not being a stakeholder sort of in the European integration process, but being a spoiler, playing off the Europeans against each other, because it's often so easy to do. But previous generations found we always ended up in a worse position sometimes when we tried to do that. And previous examples where we stepped back, like in the Balkans after the end of the Cold War, we said, we ain't got a dog in that fight, former Secretary of State Jim Baker. And the Europeans went in, and in the end, we had to go and bail them out, basically. And there was much more loss of life than if we had gone in with them in the beginning. You see similar things in some of the interventions in the Mediterranean, where the French and the British or others want to go in. We step back, and then we have to help them out. So, you know, these are tough decisions. On balance, it seems the U.S. playing a continuous role in Europe has stabilized that continent, and it has provided a deterrent to Russia. And when we have not played that role, we usually end up with a Europe that's fractious, sporadically violent, and we usually have to go in and pay a higher price, both in blood and treasure, than if we had just simply stayed the course.
Mm. Dan, thanks so much for the time.
Okay. Thank you.
That was Daniel Hamilton, a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution Center on the United States and Europe.
You know, Lori, I got to be honest, I was surprised at how well the meeting seemed to go. I think it's one of President Trump's greatest strengths by keeping everyone off balance. He really seems to be able to steer the narrative. And I think Starmer was quite pleased with what they walk away with.
And with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expected to visit the White House on Friday to potentially sign an agreement on granting the U.S. access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals, Trump seemed very positive in his thoughts about Zelensky, praised Zelensky's defense against Russia's invasion, and said they'd have a very good meeting.
You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America.
Thanks so much for joining us.
You can get news 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We will chat with you tomorrow.